This is an ABC podcast.
Good afternoon, Nikolai Bailhart's with you for the Country Hour. On the program today, a fair bit of hay and fodder has been making its way north to help feed cattle that have been hit by the Queensland floods. But in other parts of the country, of course, drought continues. Now, those two weather challenges, when you combine them up, means that there is plenty of demand for feed for livestock at the moment, so I'll find out what's happening with prices. Also on the program today, is it a game changer or is it just a publicity stunt? Woolworth's decision to raise some milk prices has had a pretty mixed reaction from farmers, but there's been a much more uniform reaction to Coles, which has not followed suit. Doesn't seem to be raising milk prices anytime soon. So we'll get more details on how that works. If you'd like to let us know what you think about those announcements, the text number 0467 842 722. 0467 842 722.
You're listening to The Country Hour on ABC Radio Victoria.
We do start today, though, in the broadacre world. Australia's government commodity forecaster has confirmed what a lot of farmers throughout the eastern states probably knew all too well. Grain production in 2018 was disastrously low. The latest national crop report from ABARES shows a drop in winter crop production of 20% to just over 30 million tonnes. Angus Furley explains.
A critical lack of rainfall throughout the eastern states during the 2018 growing season meant many crops simply ran out of moisture. Some farmers didn't even bother getting out their harvesters, while large areas of crop were cut for hay, grazed by livestock, or simply abandoned. The one shining light was Western Australia, which recorded a 21% increase in production to 17.1 million tonnes, the second largest ever. But to the east, production fell 60% in New South Wales, 51% in Victoria and Queensland, and 24% in South Australia. Drought has also hit the production of summer crops like cotton, sorghum and rice, with the total area planted falling by 23% to 1 million hectares, and production expected to drop by 33% to 2.7 million tonnes. Peter Collins, senior economist with ABARES, says there's been a perfect storm of unfavourable conditions for both winter and summer crops.
As you know, the conditions have been drier and warmer than average in the summer cropping regions of Queensland and northern New South Wales. And in the Riverina, supplies of irrigation water for the rice growers has been down on last year. And so all of these things combined have reduced prospects for summer crop production this year, and also being so dry, it's meant that a lot of the late season planting of summer crops, especially for grain sorghum, you see in places like central Queensland, well, a lot of that hasn't taken place because there's just no soil moisture and the weather forecast, the outlook is not fantastic either.
And that whole story really is a continuation of what we saw throughout the winter on the eastern seaboard?
Very much so. That is very definitely the case. You know, all up and down the eastern seaboard, and I suppose particularly in New South Wales, the dry conditions have really hit crops hard this year. No moisture, no crops really.
And total production down 20% to 30.4 million tonnes, but a large portion of that came from Western Australia.
Well, look, that's right. They had a really good finish to the season, and that's boosted production in WA. And so we've had to raise our forecast for Western Australia because the yields that are getting there at harvest were a lot better than what people were expecting they would get in September. And so we've revised WA production up. But, you know, the below average yields in the eastern states has meant that overall nationally, it's a 20% reduction on last year.
Even though some areas in the eastern states were total write-offs, it has been quite commonly said that a lot of people are surprised how much grain they did get, I suppose, yep, relative to the lack of rainfall.
No, that's right. I mean, there were parts of the Riverina in New South Wales and southern New South Wales where they were lucky and they were able to get something off, and you do hear those kinds of stories coming out of parts of those areas. But also, you know, in Victoria and South Australia, it's been patchy as well. and you know, there are places where people have been a little bit surprised by how much I've got, certainly.
For Greg Rummery, an agronomist at Walgett in northwest New South Wales, it doesn't take long to describe the past season.
I'd only need one word: dry. In reality, it was the smallest crop year I've seen in the last 30 years in this district, in terms of crop actually planted, smaller again in terms of crop established, and probably definitely smaller again in terms of crop actually harvested. The amount of crops harvested in this district, really within 100 kilometre radius of Walgett, you could count on one hand.
Could you give a rough estimate on what sort of total tonnage might have been harvested around Walgett?
That would be very hard for me to do, I think, but realistically we'd be talking thousands of tonnes, not even tens of thousands of tonnes.
And that really is in stark contrast, isn't it? So only 2 years ago, 2016, around Walgett, when it was estimated that there was more than 1 million tonnes harvested.
Look, the period of years we've endured here since 2012, so 12 being a good year, 16 being a good year, and fundamentally droughts in each and every other year. The extremes we've seen here over that last sort of 7 year period has been unprecedented certainly in recent history.
And it's still dry now?
Very dry, and the prospect for this winter doesn't look great, I have to say. Being a realist, we have very low subsoil moisture levels, and the outlook for rain isn't promising. So 2019 at this stage in February looks pretty bleak.
The 2018 season was a tale of stark contrast for Western Australian farmer Dylan Hirsch. He recorded above average yields on his property around 300 kilometres north of Perth in the Perenjori Shire.
We were coming off essentially our worst drought on record in 2017, so it was really a catch-up year for us. So we're back on an even keel again, and really hope that the guys over in the East Coast can perhaps have one of those years for them this year. In terms of production, we had an above average season, and that came off the back of probably about average rainfall. But water efficiency was quite good throughout the year. So, I think it was good rainfall timing throughout the year, and we had a bit of summer moisture there as well. And some people were very surprised at how well the final yields were, very much above expectations.
And how about the season from a profitability and a bottom line perspective?
One of the things that I guess was really pleasing is we did have good prices. So it was just pleasing that we were in a position where we were able to make the best out of from both, and they came together. So profitability, it was probably our best year in recent memory.
That's Western Australian farmer Dylan Hirsch speaking there with Angus Verley, highlighting some of the differences between the west and the eastern seaboard this year when it comes to broadacre crops. Well, as I mentioned, meanwhile, fodder's been making its way north to feed cattle that have been hit by Queensland floods. One of the big challenges, of course, there is getting it in there at the moment. But in other parts of the country, there's a challenge as well. Drought, of course, continuing in a number of regions. Now, when you put those two weather challenges together, that means there is plenty of demand for feed for livestock. John McHugh is the CEO of the Australian Fodder Industry Association.
Well, look, it certainly throws up some additional quite big challenges for the movement of fodder. Of course, in Queensland, where they've had these devastating floods, they are going to be in need of extra fodder for those animals that have survived and on higher ground. And as that water recedes, it's going to have done quite a bit of damage to a lot of the ground up there. So they're going to need extra fodder. But getting that fodder into that part of the country when it's been so wet is going to be a challenge. It's going to be a challenge for a little while. There's certainly been some emergency airlifting of fodder in, I am aware of, but in terms of getting transports in with additional supplies, that's going to be somewhat difficult to do for a period of time.
Do you see a large amount of fodder making its way from the south further north over the coming months?
Look, I think that is certainly going to be the case. We have been, that's the Australian Fodder Industry Association, have been contacted by the National Farmers Federation. We have a good relationship with NFF, and they have sought some advice from us as to where they might be able to find some fodder supplies to provide some relief to those farmers up being flood affected. And we have done that, and I am aware that there is inquiries and supplies being sought out now to be made available to those farmers.
Yeah, because I guess that is the challenge in a land of drought and floods at the same time. In some cases, there's probably not a whole lot of fodder to go around still.
No, there isn't. And look, that is going to be the issue not only for the flood-affected farmers in Queensland, but, you know, where we've still got ongoing drought and very dry conditions throughout, Queensland, and parts of Queensland, certainly through New South Wales. And, of course, even in our own backyard down here in Victoria and East Gippsland, which is still, which is in very dire straits as well in terms of prolonged dry. So all these are just additional pressure points on the supply chain for fodder, and a supply chain which was already under quite a bit of duress.
Are there any growing regions that have kind of come back online and are producing more?
Look, there are supplies available certainly out of, places like southwest Victoria and southeast South Australia and around South Australia, and certainly WA, apart from the tyranny of distance, are probably in reasonably good shape in terms of supply. Tasmania's not in a bad shape either, but, when you're talking about Tasmania and WA, of course, the tyranny of distance works against you there to get supplies to the eastern seaboard of Australia. Certainly, we've got pretty good supplies that are available, as I say, out of southwest Victoria and places in South Australia, which are helping and which are, welcome that those supplies are there. In fact, look, if you want to find fodder at the moment, you can find it, and the hay traders and others, growers, some growers and hay traders will certainly have good stocks available. Unfortunately, most people will probably think the price is still relatively unpalatable.
Yeah, and so on that note, have prices come back a little bit, or are they still quite high?
They're still very high. We've seen a little bit of movement, but nothing that you would consider has taken the pressure off pricing at all. And as we move through 2019, as we start to get through summer and we start to think about, at some stage the onset of winter, which may seem like a long way away for some people, but that sort of forward planning is adding additional pressure onto that supply base. We don't get an adequate and widespread and good autumn break this year, Nikolai, then, that pressure on the fodder supply chain is only just going to increase. And supplies are going to get very, very tight.
That's John McHugh, the CEO of the Australian Fodder Industry Association.
You're listening to The Country Hour on ABC Radio Victoria.
Well, it is 17 past 12. My name's Nikolai Bailharts. Well, major agribusiness company Elders says Australia is losing ground against other countries when it comes to things like productivity and exports, and that things have to change. One of the issues, it says, is that existing technology sometimes struggles to make it out of the lab and into the paddock. Elders Managing Director is Mark Ellison.
Well, with the new goals that we've set to produce 100 billion of produce by 2030, and that's up from 63 billion now, it really means that we need to be globally competitive, we need to be highly productive, and we need to adopt all the technologies and innovations we can to achieve that. So when we look at the trends over the last 20 years across all agriculture, our productivity rates have been dropping, and a number of countries, including with specific commodities, so beef in South America, particularly Brazil, in Central Asia and Eastern Europe, with grain production, we are dropping in terms of our competitive ability from a productivity viewpoint.
Does that worry you?
Yeah, well, it does, because Australia is largely export country, and with our proximity to ASEAN countries, so with 800 million people, and China with 1.2 billion people, it's absolutely critically important that we stay competitive, and particularly when we're up against it in terms of labour costs and some of the infrastructure costs that we have as legacy infrastructure in Australia. So it's very, very important for us to keep ahead of the game. At the moment, we're losing market share, so our absolute volumes in some of the beef and grain commodities, as two large ones, have increased, but we've lost market share in those key markets as those developing and emerging countries take advantage of their competitive advantage.
Is there a direct link to the technologies that Australia is developing there? In other words, is Australia not doing as good a job as other countries when it comes to developing new technologies?
Well, I think there's two parts to it. Well, one part of it is Australia has always been a great global citizen, and we've helped Brazil, we've helped Black Sea countries, we've helped Thailand be more productive in their agriculture. So we've done that through the 70s, 80s and 90s, and now they have become powerhouses in their various commodities, whether it be sugarcane, beet, grain, whatever it may be, milk, whatever it may be. So I think there's two aspects. One of them is that we've supported them to do that, and the second aspect is that from our viewpoint, we made big gains in productivity in the 60s, 70s, 80s, particularly with conservation tillage in broadacre farming in the 80s and 90s with new chemistry that came through, but it has flattened. So I think research focused on practical outcomes, is it lower cost do we get a higher margin or does it save time? So just some key practical requirements of innovation that we need to focus on rather than research for the sake of research.
It is quite interesting on that note because obviously, you do speak to Australian farmers and a lot of them talk about how cutting edge they already are when they're doing things like, GPS is ubiquitous nearly everywhere now. Variable rate sowing has had a real uptake, electronic ear tags to kind of monitor livestock performance, but all that is not enough. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think that there are various aspects that are fantastic. And a fundamental limitation we have in a lot of our broadacre areas is that we're rain-fed, so we're not we don't have the environment. Our environment has moisture as a limiting factor. Mm. But I think on that point, how much more efficient Australian farmers could be if there was a single platform. So all of these great, satellite imagery or precision ag or all the ethics and their accounting systems were all on the one system as opposed to multiple systems, fragmented multiple platforms, which drives inefficiency as well. So I think we can do a lot better. But Australia's always had the reputation of being early adopters and of doing it well. I think we just need to do it better and better and better.
And you mentioned that idea of, getting technologies from the lab out into the paddock or getting research out into the paddock. Is there a bit of a disconnect there?
Well, I think, I gave an example from when I was the research guy way back then of a lot of the innovations that we converted into replicated trials coming from farmer practice. So farmers worked out something worked better in a certain mix or combination or whatever it happened to be, but it hadn't been validated with scientific trials. And a lot of those sort of innovations do come from farmer up rather than beanbag earring and blue skying creative thoughts down.
That's Elders Managing Director Mark Allison.
The Country Hour on ABC Radio Victoria.
22 past 12. Well, the East Gippsland Shire Council wants to use its $1 million worth of federal drought funding on upgrading the Bairnsdale sale yards and installing firefighting water supplies in remote communities. It's been 6 months since the federal funding was first announced and 3 months since the federal government provided the guidelines of how that money could actually be spent. The Wellington Shire Council announced last month that it would use most of its share for water cartage to farming households that rely on rainwater for their water supply. Isabella Pittaway spoke to East Gippsland Shire Mayor Natalie O'Connell.
We've got a range of projects undertaking for that, which would be upgrades to the East Gippsland Livestock Exchange to improve the sheep yards and put a roof over those, installation of firefighting water supplies to strategically positioned locations in smaller remote communities so that they're accessible, for firefighting purposes, and obviously during drought conditions, water is obviously a valuable resource. We'll also be working collaboratively with the Wellington Shire to implement a marketing and promotion campaign to stimulate additional economic activity within both of our regions and encourage that tourism to continue happening.
And so, that we've heard about that money for quite a few months now. How come it's taken up until, the middle of February to put an application in?
Yes, initially suggestions had gone into the federal government as to what we wanted to spend on, and then those were sort of knocked back. So when we reformed the drought reference group earlier on this year, these suggestions were discussed and had broad table support. So and we've put that to the guidelines, and they fit.
And when will you know with the federal funding, when will you know if those applications are successful?
I think it'll be a fairly quick turnaround, as the funding is supposed to be extended by June 2019. So we, you know, they'll be wanting to get a quick turnaround so that we can get these projects on the road.
Earlier, one of the issues that you mentioned, and we know it is a big issue with the drought, is water. And we've seen veggie growers raise concerns. There's been, you know, changes to the status for water and what level it's at in terms of restrictions and that sort of thing. What is the council doing to address those water concerns?
Well, we actually moved a motion last council meeting in urgent other business to make available and sort of be able to advocate for our community the feasibility study that was commissioned by Southern Rural Water last year on water security in the Lindeno Valley. So we will write to that authority to get access to that report so that we can then use that to advocate to state and federal on you know, that issue of securing water storage in the Lindeno Valley.
Anything in particular in that report that you're pushing for, or that feasibility study rather?
Well, obviously that it would show a positive result for that, and therefore, you know, that there is a case to put forward to the state and federal government to look at funding some sort of off-river storage, or be that on-farm storage for farmers to access as well.
That's East Gippsland Shire Mayor Natalie O'Connell speaking with Isabella Pittaway. 26 past 12 here on the Country Hour. Well, moving from droughts to floods, a northwest Queensland vet says that cattle that survived flooding are still dying from pneumonia despite the best efforts of graziers. Artisan Veterinary Services' Libby Harriman says livestock and pets are presenting with things like shell shock, joint inflammation, eye conditions and three-day sickness. She says the flooding has also come at a personal cost, with flooding on her cattle properties.
We've got two properties, one at Muttaburra and one at Huondon. We've got a Brahman stud, so we've got, you know, a lot of our bulls up here and a couple of hundred breeders. And to date, we've only seen about half of them here. There's been a lot of fencing damage, so we don't know how far they've been washed downstream. We've got 10 to bring home from the neighbours today. But, yeah, there's still a good 100 missing further downstream, hopefully not all the way to Corumba.
Yeah,
but, yeah. Good luck, they'll turn up eventually.
But you think you've lost half in terms of stock losses?
Yeah, absolutely.
How did Muttaburra fare?
Muttaburra, 6 inches of beautiful rain. Some of the older cows did die from exposure down there, but it's starting to green up nicely. So, you know, another follow-up shower, and we should have a, you know, half decent season down there. So it'll be nice.
From a veterinary perspective, this Monday, you know, it's been a couple of weeks now since the event. How are animals doing? What's your concerns at this point?
Amy, it's been a very rugged couple of weeks for everybody, our clients, my staff, myself. We've all had little minor breakdowns. We've been seeing quite a variety of afflictions amongst cattle, lots of pneumonias. Lots of cattle that are just stiff and sore. They've been being bogged up to their hocks in mud. They're either too sore now to move, or they're too scared to move in case they bog again. We've got the flies coming on now, so we've got worries with eye conditions and you know, the risk of three-day sickness coming along. Lots of rain scald, and horses have been, you know, stuck in wires, they've got rain scald and coughs and colds. And even the dogs and cats are you know, not immune from all this too, because the mozzies and the flies will annoy them as well. So across the board, it's quite a serious animal emergency.
Are graziers still losing cattle at this stage?
Around here, Amy, yes, they are. I was talking to one client this morning. Got some antibiotics from us to treat her. She had 500 weaners with pneumonia, and they blanket treated all of them. Some of them are getting better, some are still getting worse. So we're not expecting to save them all, Amy. It would be unreasonable to expect 100% recovery rate, but for everybody, for their state of mind and also for their bank balance, they need to at least try to save some, and if we can save, you know, 20, 30, 50% then that's going to be, you know, a lot of help to everybody.
Gee, it's been a long and painful event. If cattle are still dying at this stage, gee, I feel for you all.
Yeah, it's really, really dreadful. We had a teleconference last night with all the vets in North Queensland to discuss, you know, how the situation's evolving. And out in the Gulf, apparently, they're well into recovery mode now. Pretty much what's going to die has died, and you know, there's a few little potties around that they're treating now. But I think, you know, closer up, we're still seeing, you know, quite a few issues. People are still only just getting around to their cattle. It's still quite wet in places. So, yeah, every day we're getting new calls for treatment, and yeah, it's
Have you enough supplies?
That's another really good question, Amy. We have had tremendous support from most of the drug companies. Zoetis particularly, they were the first one on board to donate, you know, a very large amount of antibiotics. Bayer, Troy, Norbrook, I probably shouldn't be naming them all because I'm going to miss somebody. They've all been fantastically supportive. And also many of the vets around the country, the Australian Cattle Veterinarians has been a phenomenal support to all of us, both, you know, mentally and emotionally for the vets on the ground, and also, you know, vets across Australia have donated funds into a fighting fund, and we can draw on medications from there.
Wow, that's impressive.
It is. It's amazing, you know, how a tragedy brings out the best in people, and it's really dreadful that we have to have a tragedy to realise how good people are, but inherently everybody does want to help.
That's Libby Harriman, Artisan Vet Services, based at Tewenden, speaking there with Amy Phillips. 29-1 here on the Country Hour. Time to get the latest in news headlines now with Daniel Miles. Afternoon, Daniel.
Good afternoon, Nikolai. The Homicide Squad is investigating the disappearance of a 31-year-old Ballarat woman after human remains were found in Victoria's East this morning. The body was found near Sale in Gippsland, but is yet to be identified. Forensic officers have arrived at the 31-year-old's Ballarat property. None of the neighbours who have spoken to the ABC say they knew the woman, who was last seen on Sunday. Police say a 22-year-old man and a 19-year-old woman have been arrested in relation to the woman's disappearance. Meanwhile, a Bendigo man has been charged after a fatal car crash in central Victoria last July. The crash at Greytown between Heathcote and Nagambi killed a 55-year-old woman. A 60-year-old man will face court today on dangerous driving charges. Another court has ordered Central Victorian's Urban Water Authority, Colobun Water, to pay $100,000 towards an environmental project after a sewage spill into Kyneton's Post Office Creek. More than a million litres of raw sewage escaped in July 2016 when a pipe burst at the town's water treatment plant. Colobun was sentenced without conviction and ordered to give funding to the Dja Dja Wurrung Corporation for the Aboriginal Waterway Assessment of Post Office Creek. The Australian Society of Kangaroos has labelled the Victorian government's kangaroo pet food trial excessive. The group says the government's evaluation summary report shows nearly 1 million Victorian kangaroos have been killed as part of the trial over 5 years. The society says the numbers that are being slaughtered aren't sustainable. And finally, a 320-ton superload vehicle is making its way to Horsham and expected to travel through town earlier than expected. The truck is carrying equipment headed for the Murrawarra Wind Farm and left Melbourne on Sunday, driving through Ararat around 9 o'clock this morning. Drivers are being told to expect delays, with the slow-moving vehicle travelling at just 20 kilometres an hour. Nikolai, that's the very latest from our newsrooms around the state. For more, you can always head online to abc.net.au/news.
Thank you very much, Daniel Miles. Now let's head off to the Bureau of Meteorology and find out how things are looking. Senior forecaster on duty is Peter Newham. Afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon, Nikolai.
A fair bit cooler today than yesterday, at least in most places.
Yeah, that's right. And we're in for a pretty settled but cool week, really. It's due to a couple of weakish fronts moving through Bass Strait and a high just well west of us that's very slow moving. So we're in this cooler southwest to southerly flow through until the weekend. There are some isolated showers near the coast, particularly sort of south and west Gippsland and the southwest coast. But elsewhere in the south, it's pretty cloudy, and in the north, it's basically sunny. Just those moderate southwesterly winds today. And as you said, fairly cool. It's only going to get to the low 20s in the south. A lot of the north will be the mid 20s and maybe just touching sort of 31 at Albury Wodonga looks like being the warmest part of the state today, that far northeast corner. But yeah, really things don't change much through the remainder of the week. Tomorrow we'll get a weak front move through Bass Strait. It'll just keep those isolated showers going along the southwest coast and pushing into south and west Gippsland, and later in the day might move over the Melbourne area. So this will remain pretty cloudy day in the south. So maximums just in the low 20s again, getting the mid to high 20s in the north. By Thursday, I think those isolated showers will mostly clear during the day from the southern part of the state. It'll be a fair bit of cloud about in the south, and again sunny in the north. Minimums in the low teens generally, and maximums again ranging from the low 20s in the south to the high 20s in the north. And by Friday, that cloud in the south should generally clear. It'll be a sunnier day in the south. There might be some isolated showers near the far east Gippsland coast, but basically a dry day. And again, temperatures ranging from the low 20s in the south to high 20s in the north, perhaps touching 30 along the Murray. And then the high pressure system will finally sort of move east of us, or southeast of us during the weekend and early next week. So we gradually go around to northeast to northerly winds, and just means getting slightly warmer. Saturday through to Tuesday will all be dry and mostly sunny. Initially just mid-20s in the south, maximum temperatures and low 30s in the north, but by Monday and Tuesday it'll probably get into the low 30s over the south and the mid-30s in the north. So really it's quite a slow-moving weather pattern. And nothing much to sort of dwell on, really. No significant rainfall, no extreme heat. I mean, it gets into the mid to high 30s in the north by early next week. Doesn't look like being particularly windy accompanying that, so hopefully not particularly high fire dangers. Pretty settled weather really coming up.
Okay, well, sometimes slow and steady wins the race. Thank you very much, Peter.
No worries.
That's Peter Newham. He's duty forecaster, senior forecaster, I should say, at the Bureau of Meteorology.
You're listening to The Country Hour on ABC Radio Victoria.
It is 23 to 1. My name is Nikolai Bailharts. Well, there have been some pretty mixed reactions from farmers across the country to the announcement from Woolworths that it will end $1 a litre milk. It will raise the price by 10 cents and pass that extra 10 cents on to farmers on a 2-litre bottle. Woolworths says the extra payment came after extensive consultation and lobbying from Australian dairy farmers and also the group Dairy Connect. Paul Harker, director of Woolworths Fresh Foods, says they stand by their statement that all 10 cents will directly go back to farmers.
Well, actually, we responded to what industry asked us to do. So we consulted widely with industry, in fact, all of the state bodies and also the national body to see what they thought. And we determined this was the best and most effective means in the short term to get the extra money raised by customers directly to dairy farmers.
And so the dairy farmers came to you and said, this system isn't working, we need a bit more help?
The industry did. So when it comes to our private label milk, we actually don't deal directly with the farmers themselves, which is actually why this mechanic has been put in place, because we don't know specifically who all of them are. We get this money, it's corralled. We make sure that the processors who are effectively sourcing the milk and paying the farmers distribute all of those funds. And we have an independent auditor that actually sits over the top to make sure that every single cent gets passed back to the dairy farmers.
So dairy farmers came to you, was it sort of organisations like ADF or Dairy Connect?
Yeah, no, ADF, Dairy Connect, and in actual fact, we spoke to every single state representative body as well. And this is what they asked for. And with their support, that's why we decided to take this nationally and to make it permanent whilst we work through a longer-term solution with industry.
And how much money do you think it'll generate, this move?
Look, if customers continue to support this by buying milk, it's going to be well over $30 million annually. And as best we've managed to work out with talking to our suppliers, there's about 450 dairy farmers in Australia whose milk goes into Woolworths private label milk. So that's over $30 million going to about 450 dairy farming families. But more importantly, it's actually going back into the communities that they belong to as well, because they obviously now have funds that they can spend in the rural communities that actually depend on them.
And what sort of pay rise would it be for the average farmer?
I'm not sure what the average pay rise would be for the average farmer. I think it would depend on their circumstances and what they were getting initially in terms of their farm gate milk price. What we've just done here is try to make sure that every single cent of the 10 cents actually gets back to them.
Well, that was the other question. A lot of people have texted in yesterday to the Country Hour saying, are they going to get the full 10 cents a litre? And some people are saying, oh, no, because of market share, I'm only going to get 5 cents a litre. How does that work?
Well, I think, importantly, the 10 cents is on all of the milk that goes into Woolworths' own brand milk. So obviously some dairy farmers will be sending milk to processors, and a lot of that milk may not be going into our milk. It could be going into other brands or for other purposes. So if only half of your milk was going into Woolworths milk and the other half wasn't, it would look like 5 cents, but it's absolutely 10 cents on all of the milk that that we took to put into our product.
So no money going into admin, no money going to processors?
No money going into admin whatsoever. And in actual fact, I think every single industry body has actually come out to support the fact and to help reassure customers that they've looked at that payment mechanism, and they're absolutely confident that not a single cent stays in the supply chain.
Now, we've had measures like this where there's been an increase in price for a while. The drought levy, for example, is this open-ended? Is it going to stay for a while? Is there a cut-off date?
Look, there isn't a cut-off date. What we will do is, over time, we'll need to work with industry and our processes to work out how this actually becomes the normal way of doing business. So in the future, if we transition to a different model, we'll need to do so and make sure that everyone is still aware of the fact that the extra price that's gone through to customers now, it stays there and it's enduring, and how farmers are paid into the future. So, this mechanic will evolve over time, but with the absolute intent that the money stays in the hands of direct dairy farmers.
And is it the case that, you know, Woolworths are actually admitting that you weren't paying dairy farmers enough for the milk?
No, I don't think that's actually the case. One, we don't actually pay dairy farmers in this instance. I think what we're actually doing here is, this is actually really complicated, and you can read the ACCC report that actually says that they don't believe that the retail price of milk actually has a material impact on farm gate prices. Now, we could hide behind that and have a debate about the economics, but what we actually learnt in the process of having conversations with industry is, this is much a psychological barrier than an economic barrier. And rather than debate the economics of whether it would or wouldn't, we heard very strongly from industry that this is actually a mental well-being issue in terms of how dairy farmers in Australia are thinking about how Australians value the work that they do. And in actual fact, focusing on the $1 a litre milk was actually stopping people from moving on and actually addressing some of the bigger structural reform issues that needed to happen in the industry.
That's Paul Harker. He's director of Woolworths Fresh Foods Division, speaking there with Michael Condon. I'd be keen to hear from you what you make, having heard from Woolworths directly. Do you think this is good news? Will it change what milk you buy? 0467 842 722 is the text number if you'd like to get in touch. As I say, there have been mixed reactions from farmers to the news. Some are calling it a game changer. Others are saying it's nothing more than a publicity stunt. Drew and South dairy farmer Trevor Mills falls into that category, saying it is nothing more than a stunt. He says any increase needs to apply across all dairy products.
Oh, I think it's a very small step in the right direction, but I see it more as a publicity stunt. 10 cents a litre on liquid milk is just nowhere near enough. If they start talking 50 cents, even a dollar increase on liquid milk will probably be more appropriate.
At the end of the day, do you think this extra 10 cents is going to make much of a difference to a farmer's bottom line?
I can't see it. Given that our liquid milk sales, I believe, only make up something like about 6% of our total sales of milk in the country. 10 cents on 6% of our production equates to not very much money at all in the farming industry these days.
And you're mentioning there that that's 6% supply to Woolies.
Yes, I believe so. Someone might correct me on that, but I don't think our milk goes into all different products. It goes into making butter, cheese, yogurt, milk powders, and everything. If they put the able to put the 10 cents a litre across all of those products, it might make a bit of a difference. But when you're just talking about on one product, I can't see it making much difference at all to the dairy industry.
What can the dairy industry make of this then, do you think? Should we see other supermarkets follow suit? Is it just pointless doing something like this or a good start? Does it show that supermarkets are listening? I know I've given you a few questions there, but what do we take from this announcement?
I think it's more a publicity stunt by the supermarkets. Sure, it's a small step in the right direction, but I think the supermarkets are just starting to feel that much pressure. They feel if they increase the price by 10%, the general public, thinks, well, the farmers are getting extra 10% in income, whereas that's not really the case at all. I think we've really got a golden opportunity here, not just for the supermarkets, but all our milk processors and Dairy Australia to jump on board and use the current debate over, $1 a litre milk and the serious drought that we've got in this country and put it out there that, farmers are doing it very tough and the public needs to pay a lot more for their milk products. And, let's see a rise of, say, 25-30% across all milk products sold in the supermarket, and then we might be starting to get somewhere.
That's Drew and South Dairy farmer Trevor Mills speaking with Isabella Pittaway. As I mentioned, it seems Coles is not going to follow suit in raising prices. It's issued a statement saying, quote, Coles is passionate about supporting our farmers and producers. In the past 6 months, has committed $16 million to supporting this important industry. Coles also knows that many customers in Australia face cost of living pressures and doesn't want them to be disadvantaged through price increases. Coles also notes that the ACCC has previously examined the Australian dairy industry and concluded that house brand milk pricing does not negatively impact farm gate milk prices. Goes on to say Coles is seeking a long-term solution that does not disadvantage our customers and supports our dairy farmers. LD2 has made a statement. It says it's not supportive of retailer-led initiatives that seek to bypass the normal supply chain and channel money directly from retailers to primary producers. If you'd like to send us a text and let us know what you make of all of this, 0467 842 722 is the text number. Angela from Eden Hope says a better action by all supermarkets would just be to pay a responsible price for all milk. And somebody else says, they don't say what kind of milk, but 1.5 litre bottle of milk's increased at their local IGA. 0467 842 722 is the text number. Well, the Agriculture Minister wants you to buy your milk from somewhere other than Aldi and Coles. David Littleproud has rubbished the major retailers for continuing to offer milk at $1 a litre. Not mincing his words this morning, the Minister called on Coles and Aldi to lift their game.
In August, I spoke to all the CEOs of all the supermarkets and asked them to help me help the reform of the dairy industry. I needed time. I'm putting in a mandatory code of conduct. Woolworths really were the only ones that were genuine. Coles were arrogant, and the big German Aldi basically gave me the one-finger salute. In essence, Woolworths took some leadership back then and put in a drought range with the 10 cents. Coles were forced into it. But now that Woolworths have shown more leadership and said they're going to get rid of $1 milk, Coles have basically been arrogant, as they were arrogant back in August when I asked them to do this. So in essence, they're saying to the dairy industry, we don't particularly care. We don't care about...
But if you care so much, why don't you legislate a change or why don't you set the price?
We don't have to. I mean, we shouldn't have to interfere in a marketplace unless we have to, and I am. And I am. Well, I am. I am with a mandatory code of conduct that ACCC asked us to undertake, and I'm in the process of implementing that. And that's why I went to the supermarkets to show leadership, to allow me the time to put that in place. And they said, Woolworths were the only ones that said they'd come on the journey. Coles were bought kicking and screaming, and now the big Germans run back to Germany, and we can't hear from them at all.
Should we expect you to next stand up and tell Australians where they shouldn't buy their fruit and veg or their meat?
No, what I'm asking Australians is to be fair. and to think what is fairness in this country. And when you have an imbalance in the marketplace between the farm gate and the processor, which we've got a code of conduct which we put in place, and the ACCC report, while Coles say that it let them off the hook, that's nonsense. They did identify the fact that Coles, there was an imbalance between the supermarkets and the processor. I believe that there's need for an improvement in the grocery code of conduct, and we as a government will be looking at that very soon. But we're going to come in under pressure from all our National Party and Liberal Party members who represent dairy farmers around making sure there is a fair marketplace. Government shouldn't interfere in marketplaces. They should only get involved when there is an imbalance. And the ACCC showing there's a balance, I'm working on that piece of it, but we need to make sure that the supermarkets show some leadership as well.
Before the dollar a litre milk started, it was selling for something like $1.28, and that was almost a decade ago. Should we really be celebrating this as a win when we've got dairy farmers going out the back door at a rate of knots?
Well, that's why I've been cautiously happy with what Woolworths have done. I'm not sitting here giving them the big slap on the back. In fact,
but you are giving their rivals a big serve.
Well, they're doing nothing, and so I should.
Coles would say that it's now going to collect donations at its register, having already donated significantly to the drought in recent times.
You know what? Farmers don't want to be charitable. They don't want to be charities. They actually want just a fair price for their commodity. They don't want to have people donate at the counter. They actually want to just get a fair price for their commodity, and that's all they're asking for. And that's what Coles and Aldi are effectively saying: look, we're not going to come on any journey with you. We're basically saying we'll just collect a few dollars in the tin at the counter, and that'll do us.
So what's next? The cheese? Are you going to have a say on that as well?
Well, that's exactly what I asked of Woolworths and all the supermarkets, not just to give it on fresh milk. It needs to go right across the dairy range. And that's why I haven't been as glowing around Woolworths' move as what everyone would like, because I think there's still more work to do. And I've said that yesterday from the outset. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. This is a first step in breaking dollar litre milk, but it goes further than that, because in essence, that 10 cents means that farmers are getting 3 to 4 cents, because not all their product goes into milk. Some goes into cheese and yogurts. So it should be right across the range. And if they were serious about a sustainable industry into the future, then they would help in doing what Woolworths have done, but extend it right across their range.
I know there's lots of issues going on for other commodities as well, but how significant is this for you?
Oh, it's very serious. I mean, particularly in respect to the fact that the drought is exacerbating it. And even though some of the dairy farms mightn't be in drought-affected areas, in essence, they're buying a lot of commodity that's coming out of feed that's coming out of drought-affected areas. So it's pushing up the price, as is pork and anything that's intensive. So the reality is there's a responsibility to have a sustainable industry. And if we want to drink fresh milk in this country, then it's important that we all work together, the supermarkets as well. They're part of the chain, and they have a responsibility to lead that, and Woolworths have. And it shows you don't need to wait for government to do that. Woolworths have shown you can actually create the mechanism to support dairy farmers. And for Aldi to say we're going to wait for government to do it, let me give a message to the big German. In Australia, you don't wait to do the right thing. You do it yourself. We expect good corporates to do that. Coles had a crack at it, and they were disingenuous at best. They put the money in their account. They kept it there for as long as they could, and then they divvied it out only at the end of last month. And now they're saying the drought's over. The drought finished on the 31st of December, so don't worry about it. And so they've basically said, we don't really care. But now they're saying, well, we can come up with a structural reform that we believe will change. We'll put up or shut up.
That is the Federal Agriculture Minister, David Littleproud, speaking there with Kath Sullivan. A few more of your texts through on this announcement by Woolies to increase some milk prices. One says the Woolies rep spoke very well, but I'll continue buying Great Ocean Road milk. Nigel says Woolworths increased the retail price of milk. It hasn't cost Woolworths anything to increase the price for 450 farmers. Another person says, I'm happy to pay what farmers deserve. Without farmers, we cannot survive. Another person saying the trouble is that farming costs are too high. The price has not kept up on all products. 0467 842 722 is the text number.
Hi, Julia Baird here.
And Ellen Fanning.
You know, there are at least two sides to any story.
And everyone has an opinion.
Weeknights at 6, Ellen and I will bring you debate without the spin on the drama.
We don't govern by temper tantrum.
The just say no message isn't working. Passion, expertise, unscripted chat.
The Drum. Now weeknights at 6 on ABC TV.
You're listening to The Country Hour on ABC Radio Victoria.
Where it is 6-1, well, it seems some farmers and freighters operating in Western Victoria have had a win overnight, with more than a $400 million Murray-Darling Basin Rail upgrade making progress. As former Deputy Prime Minister Tim Fisher explained to Kath Sullivan, Victorian freight is now moving more efficiently.
At 10 p.m. last night, at long last, the Near East Ararat Triangle, the newest bit of standard gauge in Australia, was activated for a northbound freight train for the first time, heading from Melbourne to Mildura. Result, it did not have to go through Ararat and reverse. 90 minutes was saved and will be saved every time this new triangle is used. It's been in the pipeline a long while. The breakthrough occurred 10 p.m. last night.
So just how significant is that?
In terms of rail productivity, it means the standardisation of Mildura will be now much more worthwhile. About an hour and a half saving on every movement, whether it's freight forwarders looping around, Ken Wakefield and others at Mildura, exporters from Mildura, grain trains from Oyen and the like. And I had a friend, Richard Keyes, at the location, physically watching the ARTC activate the points. The finishing off now is for automatic point operation from Adelaide switchboard of the headquarters of the ARTC and signalling, and that's probably due in mid-March. It's a complex junction. It crosses the Ararat-Ballarat broad gauge line, but it is now complete and operational at long last.
And do you take some personal satisfaction from that?
Yes, every bit of rail efficiency and productivity boost we can gain better for Australia as a whole. We need good roads, we need good rail and good rail operation. And then we can have better transport systems more generally and better export effort more efficiently.
Tim Fisher, the former chair of the Rail Freight Review Committee of Victoria, speaking with Kath Sullivan. Off to the livestock market, starting at Shepparton with Nicole Varley.
Good afternoon. Well, we had 900 exports and 400 trade cattle here at Shepparton. Amongst the exports, there were over 500 cows. There were some good quality lots of finished C4 grind steers and bullocks that attracted increased competition. Majority of the beef cows had condition and weight and prices there lifted by 3 to 10 cents for the beef type, while the dairy cows also finished a few cents better. Trade cattle consisted of a few more supplementary fed or crop finished yearlings and dealers this sale. Prices for the better ends of the C and B muscle dealing steers and dealers, 3 to 10 cents steer. Also, dealers going to the trade, 268 to 96 cents. Yearling steers, B and C muscles, made from 264 to a top of 302.6. And there were less yearling heifers penned this week. But the yearling heifers, C muscle types, 251 to 282 cents. The 500 to 600 kilo bullocks, 256 to 275. 600 kilo plus bullocks to 278. Heavy beef cows, 196 to 210, and the dairy portion, heavy dairies, 143 to 192. This is Nicole Varley from Shepparton.
Thanks, Nicole. Now to Ballarat and Graeme Palmer.
Good afternoon, everyone. Lamb supplies lifted at Ballarat this week by about 3,800 to 13,500 head. It's on top of stronger returns. Quality range from average to good, with quality lambs finished on fodder crops, attracting keen competition. Usual buying group attendant operated strongly in the dearer market on the trade weight and lighter export weight lambs. They are up by $5 to $10 a head, with extra heavy lambs selling around firm. Extra heavy lambs reached $126 and the heavier trade weight sold to $184. Unshorn lambs reached $189. Restocker lambs sold mostly from $103 to $146 to be a few dollars dearer. It's about 11,000 sheep still to be sold. Trade weight 3-score lambs sold from $132 to $150.50 at average around $710. Heavier trade weight selling mostly from $155 to $184 at around $710 to $715. Export 3- and 4-score lambs from $178 to $209 have averaged around 700 cents. And the extra heavy export lambs sold from $202 to $226, they're around $635 to $640. Heavy hoggets made to $164. Then Graeme Pyman, Ballarat for MLA.
Thanks, Graeme. Now to Wodonga and Leanne Dax.
Numbers lifted to 1,280 in a fair to very good quality offering across some categories of yearlings and dealers. Most of the usual buying group were at the rail, with more urgency shown from domestic buyers for well-finished yearlings and the tops of the veal, Veal listed 4 to 8 cents with the pick of the veal, 264 to 319. Trade steers gained 4 cents, 262 to 299. Feeder steers sold 8 cents dearer for the medium weights, 240 to 283. Trade heifers jumped 20 cents, 242 to 293. Feeder heifers, 220 to 259. Grown steers were firm, 240 to 270, with some European steers selling out to 299. Forage slipped 8 cents, 240 to 263. And heavy heifers with shape, 234 to 265. I'm Leanne Dax for MLA.
Thanks very much, Leanne. That is it for the Country Hour for today. If you'd like to know more about some of the stories we've brought you, including the reaction to Woolworths introducing higher prices for some of its milk products, all those details up on the website, abc.net.au/rural. It's news time, 1 o'clock.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.